Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show where we explore all avenues of transformation and aim to mine a few nuggets of gold that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, even though sometimes it feels counterintuitive, just like the nightingale, a bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and today's show is brought to you in association with Nasal Guard, the drug-free nasal gel that uses electrostatic technology to block harmful airborne contaminants. And because it also blocks indoor and outdoor allergens, it's great for travellers and pet lovers alike. Later, we'll hear from Rana Khouri, who merges traditional practice with modern science to provide holistic well-being support for her clients. First, spring has officially sprung here in the Northern Hemisphere. It seems to have been a long time coming somehow this year. But while some of us are celebrating the lengthening days and nature's reawakening, others are starting to worry about the pollen count. Hay fever can be hugely debilitating, but Nasal Guard promises relief from that and more. Here's how it's helped one very happy customer, Janet Costello, who's been using the product for some time. I asked her why she was drawn to Nasal Guard in the first place.
I could not recall if I had been doing some research first or I had run into it in a retailer and then begun looking at what is this, how does it work, what is their credibility. But it was definitely coincided with the beginning of the pandemic, and it made a lot of sense to me.
Okay. And did it make a lot of difference as well?
So, right. It's hard. It's going to be hard to tell. Yeah. But I can tell you that I was not a mask wearer for a lot of reasons. And it is what it is. I did what I had to do to comply with local standards. I also went out to work a retail job with the public, kind of in the middle of it. So I needed to get out of my house. I needed to do something different. And I thought to myself, well, this is a really good time to put this stuff to the test.
I
did use it any chance I was like legally or mandate-wise permitted to not wear a mask. I did not. Any social activities I could do. I mean, I stayed really well during the pandemic. What can you do with that? I have some interesting other facets. I have two children. One of my sons has Down syndrome, but also happens to have alopecia. And alopecia, he has no eyebrows, no eyelashes, no hair. So your eyebrows and eyelashes, they're a big defense mechanism. So I've been working with him for a really long time. He does not love Nasal Guard, but I'm working with him. I'm working with him, and we have gotten it on him on a lot of occasions because I feel like there's a huge benefit, you know, to people who don't have that first line of defense. And a couple of times in very, very dusty, very debris, we did a fair that had, we walked on dirt paths.
Yeah.
It was a very dusty event. And I put Nasal Guard right where his eyebrows would be. And I could actually see, I could see dirt and dust all stuck to that area, which means it wasn't going in his eyes.
Yeah.
So there's a definite application there. I just think for people who are more motivated, he's probably not the best test subject, but I could see how it could be very, very helpful to people with alopecia.
Yeah, I can see that too. And the fact that you could actually see that it was attracting the dust. I reckon that, you know, if you maybe at the beach or, you know, somewhere like in the summertime, maybe you're in a bit of a desert area where there's a lot of dust swirling around, it would be a good thing to use. Yeah.
I agree. So I still work with him. I also work for a professional organizer cleaning, you know, organizing people's homes. But one of the aspects we do is basements and garages. And I actually had an incident where I forgot that I had been utilizing Nasal Guard and got started in a basement and became very, very sorry that I didn't have it. But I found it in my car, in my purse. So I was able to go wash my face, restart the day, use my Nasal Guard, and it makes a humongous difference with dust and all that kind of stuff that you're unlodging in people's dirty, dusty basements.
Basements, garages, attics, full of dust, right? Yeah.
Full of it. And I would always end the day feeling like, am I getting sick? Am I getting a cold? But it would just be the exposure. And I know for a fact that in those circumstances, nasal guard's been a really, really helpful tool for cleaning and, you know, dust removal, debris removal.
So how long have you been using nasal guard?
I'm guessing it's about a little over 4 years.
And you still find it really efficacious when you remember to use it.
I do. And I, like I said, I've been out and about with the public in close contact during, you know, a difficult time. And I feel like I have stayed, you know, really well. How are you going to judge that? But
yeah, it's very difficult to quantify that, isn't it? Very difficult to say that that was because of nasal guard. However, yeah, and if you weren't wearing a mask, then it's the next best thing, isn't it?
I feel like it's better.
Yeah.
It made more sense to me. Many, many years ago, my son, who has special needs, had a very unconventional allergist immunologist who was kind of experimenting with a very similar concept for kids that were very immunocompromised. And he had us doing, 25 years ago, had us doing some very similar concept things. And I thought, you know, if that same concept had come around again, keeping nasal passages very clean and possibly having some type of somewhat sticky barrier, it made sense to him. It made sense to me. So it just made sense to use it.
And I love the fact that it's drug-free as well. There's no, you know, no nasties in there. So
that's a big deal. That's a big deal for me. I don't do well. I'm not a person who does well with pharmaceuticals, chemical exposures. I've had no problems with nasal guard. I have sensitive skin. I've had no problem with nasal guard. I thought at some points, like, I guess the question, what if it doesn't work? You know, the price point is very, very good. I feel like it was a manageable, like, I'm going to give this a try.
Yeah.
Because I'm not committing hundreds of dollars. It was very nominal and it lasts a long time.
Yeah. So like why not give it a go, right? Yeah.
Why
exactly.
Not?
Well, you can't argue with that, can you? I'll be using it myself soon, once the elderflower is in full bloom. I always suffer a little bit at that time of year. Now, if you want to try Nasal Guard for yourself, just click on the link on the UK Health Radio homepage for worldwide delivery. Now, I was delighted this week to connect with a woman who is all about empowering hearts and enriching lives. So a woman after my own heart, you might say. Rana Khouri is a yoga and meditation teacher, but she's more than that. She has a degree in sports medicine as well as training in various healing modalities. And she's created a unique way of working, which we explored when she joined me for a chat. Here's how it went. Fabulous. So, Rana, it's fantastic to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining me today. Now, you do not just yoga. You're a yoga teacher, yes, but you bring so much more to the table. Tell us about your work. What is it that you bring together to help people?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. It's great to be here. Yes, my background, I started yoga a good 20 years ago and noticed very, very quickly what a big impact it had. So I went on to do my training, and most of what I do is based around yoga, but it involves a lot of meditation, spiritual practices. And I mean that from a meditative mindfulness perspective, as well as breath work. I work with women on various empowerment, holistic well-being coaching. So it's really looking at them as a whole, looking at their lives, looking at their circumstances, their backgrounds, their histories, and then putting together programs of holistic well-being for them.
Yeah. And you say on your website that you've forged a unique connection between science, ancient wisdom, and modern lifestyle. That's basically what we're talking about here, isn't it?
Exactly. I have a degree in sports medicine, so that's the science background and the biology and the anatomy and all of that. But then, and I'm also very interested in the quantum physics side of things, in the when we're shifting our mindset. So there's a very, I appreciate the backup that science gives me in whatever I provide on a on an alternative or spiritual perspective. Because people like to, they like to hear facts. They like to understand that when you're taking a breath and when you're breathing in a certain way, there are certain chemicals in your body that are being released. They like the scientific fact behind it, which gives it a little bit more credibility for some people.
Yeah. And the just, you know, I love that you say people do like facts. They do. And science is catching up with some of us here, because science is beginning to accept and realize that a lot of what they would have called a bit woo-woo is actually based in fact.
Exactly. Exactly. And I have people from both ends of the spectrum, people who are all about and happy with the woo-woo, which, you know, to me gives me joy, because there's a certain element to an extent. But then there's people on the other end of the spectrum who come to the classes and really just want to know physically, how is this going to help me? How is, why is this meditation working? Why does this breath work? So I like to have both.
Right. And because you have that background, you can actually explain why breathing affects us and how meditation affects us. So if you would, go into that a little bit about how breath work helps us. And I mean, we've talked about meditation a lot on this show, I'm sure, but and a little bit more about how meditation affects us in terms of the physical.
Perfect. Well, as we all know, meditation, I'll start with meditation, I'll get into breath work. Meditation, it's a way to really get centered and turn your gaze inward. We're so consumed by our outside world and by the external landscape that we very seldom take time to stop and really examine the internal landscape. And that's paramount, especially when we're bombarded with so much messaging, as you well know, not just the media, but everyday life. So meditation is a way to really get still. And it's not, you know, there's a misconception that meditation is about quieting your mind, because that's virtually impossible. The human brain is constantly on the go. But the prefrontal cortex, where we do all our day-to-day thinking, all our decision-making, this is the most active part of our day-to-day life, that part of our brain. And by meditating and focusing it, single-minded focus, it helps us really tap into not just the silence and give us the space to be, because there's a big obsession in our culture with the doing. And this is getting you into a state of being and being okay with what is, not trying to change anything, not trying to shift anything, just being. And you start to notice the more and more you practice, there's an overall sense of peace. Stress levels go down, stress hormones go down. Your mind is much, much more still, much more quiet. Your sleep quality improves. Focus improves. So there's a lot of very tangible benefits from a practice that people just seem to think we're sitting there and, oh, no, it's far more than that. It's actually being okay with the fact that you're noticing that your mind's wandering. It starts with you having that awareness that, oh, there it goes again, and bringing it back to saying, I'm focusing on my breath, or I'm focusing on an object, or I'm focusing on a particular state of being. So it's in doing that that you're able to keep it together from a much more centered, grounded, still, peaceful, calm, nourishing, self-nourishing way. The breath work, very similarly, you know, there's many different many different kinds of breath work, and each is intended to support people in different ways. There are different techniques of breath work which are very energizing and stimulating. There's techniques of breath work that are very quieting and soothing, and there's a time and place for all. There's a lot of new modalities of breath work I'm sure you've heard of a lot of them. There's so many different names for them. Shamanic breathwork and rebirthing breathwork and it's skipped my mind, but many different modalities that are intended to get you into a real state of release. So you get into, when we're doing very fast, aggressive breathwork, it's not aggressive, but more active breathwork, it really brings your body into a very sympathetic state where you might find yourself breaking out in tears, you might find yourself shouting, but there's a massive release. So there's different modalities for different conditions and different situations.
Oh, yes, I've heard of lots of different types of breathwork, and we'll hear more about that in a few moments. Right now, it's time for a short break. Back right after these messages.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my special guest today, Rana Khouri. Now, before the break, we were talking about breathing. I often find myself saying, well, we all just breathe naturally, don't we? But there are different forms of breathwork. And of course, breathing is part of yoga too. Here's Rana again.
Absolutely. The reason why I don't so much just say I do yoga, because I tend to find that it puts a lot of people off. And the first thing that I'll get from people is, I'm too old, I'm not flexible enough, no, I can't do that, I got an injury. And that's not what yoga is. The postures of yoga are just one of eight limbs of yoga. So if you think of like the, you know, there's different pillars of yoga, and the poses are just one of them. You've got the first two pillars, which are similar to, for lack of any better way to describe it, the 10 commandments. So the do's and don'ts, the personal do's and don'ts and the social do's and don'ts. And then it's a whole lifestyle. It's a whole approach to life. So the word yoga means union, and it means the union of your mind, body, and spirit. If you are healthy in your body, but your mind is stressed and all over the place, you're not a healthy person. That's just the bottom line. That's why I focus on saying it's a very holistic approach, and it's a very tangible and accessible approach. It doesn't matter if you're 16 or 60 or 80 for that matter. It's for everybody. There is no one size fits all. The poses don't have to look a certain way. The poses are just one small part. It's about, while you're practicing, being very present with what is. Noticing that if you're practicing but you can't breathe, then you need to back off the pose. You don't need to push yourself in the pose because it has to look a certain way. Back off the pose. I say in my classes, I'd much rather see you taking child's pose, which is a relaxation pose, for the entire session and breathe properly rather than struggle through the poses to show me how great you are at the poses, but then struggle in your breath and your mind's all over the place and you're thinking about what you're going to make for lunch. You've kind of defeated.
You're my kind of yoga instructor, I have to say, Rana, because I do enjoy, or have enjoyed, yoga. I don't practice it regularly anymore, but I have practiced it. But I found that there was so much around yoga, so much expectation around it, that I stopped going to yoga classes. And at the time, I could afford to have somebody give me one-on-one, which was great. And we did just do what I was able to do. And I remember being in one yoga group in a North London studio. And a young girl came up to me as I was trying to do a pose. And she said, oh, you know, you're supposed to straighten this or straighten your back or do something. And I said, yeah, I know that, but I can't. But it's that kind of attitude that seems to pervade a certain stratum of the yoga sphere, if you like. And I think that's partly what puts people off as well.
Oh, absolutely. And it's a very Instagram culture. So all teachers that go off and do a little bit of training, come back because they're fit and they're slim and they're young and they're flexible. It's about this is what it needs to look like. And if you don't look like that, or you don't think you can do that or achieve that, you're completely put off the whole idea.
Yeah.
I was practicing with my mother well into her 70s. I think we stopped practicing together when she was about 77. And let me tell you, she's, you know, at 77, custom made practice for her. She was brilliant and felt like $1 million afterward with the breath work, with the mindfulness, with the presence. She found it much harder to get into meditation, but is now asking me at 81 saying, you need to send me some meditations. I keep hearing about this. How do I meditate?
Brilliant. So, I love it. I love it. She'll live till she's 100. That's for sure. I'll be there after her. yeah. So it's important when we're stressed and when we know that we need to do something for our health, that we don't get put off by these things. There are solutions out there. There is no one size fits all. And that goes the same for yoga and everything else.
Everything else. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, when I get into a group situation, it's a very diverse group. I've had groups that are only women. I've had groups of women and men from all ages. Literally, my class, one of my earlier classes, the range was from 16 to about, I want to say 65. And you have to cater to everybody. And there is, and it's not impossible to do because there are variations that can be done. And the postures are meant to be a guide to reach a certain, I don't want to use the word goal, but it's there to, for example, open your heart. So if you can only move in a certain way that you can open your chest in order to be able to breathe deeper, you've done the job. You are going to feel exactly the same elation as somebody who could go all the way and do the whole extent of the pose, because you're working with what your body is telling you to do and respecting and honoring where you are here and now. I can't tell you how many people I have coming saying to me, you know what, I used to be able to do this. I was in gymnastics when I was in school. Yeah, but you're 55 years old now.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, but you're 100 now. Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong. You know, the most inspiring teachers for me from the day I started were not the young, agile, slim, pretty, picturesque looking, you know, picture perfect teachers. I was always inspired by the older teachers who, even as they aged so beautifully and gracefully with so much strength and power and confidence that I was thinking, I want to be able to do with my body, because your body is designed to do everything that yoga teaches us to do.
Yeah.
The fact that we can do them is more of a testament to our lifestyles, is that yoga is inaccessible.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, we sit too much, we don't move too much, we eat too much, we're very sedentary. So we squeeze our feet into ridiculous shoes. Our postures are all bent over now because we're all on social media. So the fact that we get into class and I'll show somebody to say, sit on your toes and heels, and your toes are meant to be able to bend back. And if they don't, it's not because you're old or stiff. It's because you have not allowed your body to maintain its openness and its mobility over the years. That's all it is. It's a very loving and kind approach.
Yes, I love that. And do you find, I've noticed recently that we're seeing a lot of social media posts with older women predominantly, who they say are in their 90s or whatever, and they're doing these extraordinary, they just look beautiful, they're well, you know, honed muscles, they're flexible, they're able to do all these yoga postures. And I sometimes wonder whether that isn't doing or giving the opposite message. You know, it's not all about striving for perfection. I mean, we should be able to be that great as we age, but let's be real about it.
Right. It's not about looking any which way. It's about how it makes you feel. And I say that in my classes all the time. not about what it looks like. It's about what it feels like. So whether you consider yourself, you know, overweight or, you know, I've heard the whole gamut of excuses as to why people can't or don't want to practice. It's not about, oh, well, I've been asked, will I look like you if I keep practicing? But why would you want to look like me?
Oh, don't say that.
I've never, for example, just a very basic example, I've never had children. My body's never, you know, carried and given birth to another living human being. Yours has. How about you honor that? There is some magic in what you've been able to do with your body. Let's celebrate that. Let's work with that. Let's empower that. You know, what's more enticing to me about looking up to the older practitioners is not the fact that they look all slim and lithe and built and toned. It's about their bone mass is probably much better than somebody who's not doing the same. Because it's also, as we get older, a lot of the poses that I'll do in class, I'm saying, this is really helping your calcium. You know, we're strengthening our bones just by holding this pose. Just knowing what it's doing to your body is enough to say, I'll do a little bit of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that you focus on women. I know that we live in a very stressful time, but these are all things that we can embrace to help us get through these stressful times. And I know that, you know, you may not want to go into it right this moment, but I know that you've had your own stresses through life, as have we all. And these are things that can really help us.
Yes, I've had my fair share. Going back years, as we all have, this past year was exceptionally challenging. All of these practices are intended to help us, literally, it's exactly what you said, to literally navigate our day-to-day lives in a very conscious, present, grounded, clear way, without letting the noise, the external circumstances affect how we manage our lives. So part of when I say holistic, so you said, yes, we're focusing on the physical, we're focusing on the breathing. That's also kind of physical.
Yeah.
But as a result, we're touching on the physical, we're touching on the mental, and we're touching on the emotional. So when life serves up its, you know, array of challenges that we never know where they're going to come from. These are just ways to be able to tap into tools that help us manage that. In moments in the past year, I've gone through a lot of grief this past year. Breathing saw me through a lot. And there are certain techniques that help me sleep. There's certain techniques when I feel an anxiety, panic attack coming on, because I, for the first time ever last year, I experienced what people have described as panic attacks. I never had a panic attack before in my life. Last year, they became a regular thing. And tapping into the breathing, tapping into, it's hard. It's not an easy thing. It's not easy to say, get on your mat and just sit and meditate for 10
minutes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No.
But your brain's all over the place. But tapping into your breathing is much more accessible. It's much easier. It's always with us. If you find yourself driving and somebody cuts you off and you just want to curse, stop for a second. And there are breathing techniques that you can do right then and there that is going to bring your heart rate down, your cortisol is going to come down, your adrenaline is going to come down. All of a sudden, you're going to feel your system say, this is not that real. I can handle this. And it's very real.
It is those simple things that we can all do with having under our belts, isn't it? Well, stay tuned for more on that after another short break to hear these messages.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Good. Welcome back to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and with me is my guest today, Rana Khoury. We were talking about simple ways to de-stress, and I asked her to share with us some of those simple things that we can do to get us through those moments where we feel that we just can't cope.
Absolutely. Well, a lot of it is becoming very mindful and becoming very centered in your body. And I know that that sounds very just a lot of words, but it's really about, first of all, noticing how you're sitting. Every time we get into any one of these states of being, you want to be conscious of if you're sitting, if you're lying down, how you're holding yourself. Because when we do get into these panic attacks, when we do get into these stressful situations, you'll tend to notice that you contract. So when everything contracts, your posture is affected, everything's affected. You're holding yourself up already in a defeated posture. So in noticing that, but when noticing, my go-to really when I'm feeling a panic attack coming on is to literally drop everything, even if it's only for 5 minutes. I'm not talking about going into an hour's practice. And closing my eyes just to shut out what's bombarding me externally. And then to really notice, first of all, how you're breathing. When I say connect with the breath, when you start focusing on the breath and focusing on trying not to focus on anything else, just notice how the inhale feels coming in and how the exhale feels coming out. Initially, you'll notice things like, is it cooler as it comes in, hotter as it comes out? Are you breathing fast? Are you breathing slow? There's no right or wrong. Are you breathing shallow? Are you breathing deep? Again, there's no right or wrong. You're just becoming aware. Oh, I'm really hyperventilating here. And then slowly starting to control that inflow and outflow of breath. It really is, as a starter kit, that simple. Noticing the inflow and outflow of breath, and then you're slowing it down. So one of the very, very many techniques is doing something as simple as breathing in for four, breathing out for four. And slow down that count of four. If you think counting to four is too short, count to eight, count to 10. Whatever works. Breathing in for that count and breathing out for that count. And just by noticing and focusing on counting, you're almost eliminating the rest of the noise because you have to stay focused on how you're breathing. So it's the quality of the breath. It's that simple. It goes from there into adding different nuances. Breathing in for four, holding it for four, breathing out for four. Then you can add another element, breathing in, holding, breathing out, holding, four, 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 four. That's called box breathing. And that's one of the most common, most go-to, easiest access breaths that you can practice without really having to get into anything too fancy. It's that simple. And you will find, if you give yourself time to do this, but really focus on, we say belly breathing. You're not actually breathing into your belly, but it's more about really fill up your torso. So really feel your chest expanding till it can't expand, but then your belly, as though you're filling up a balloon, and your entire torso gets so full of breath. And then as you're exhaling, you're gently contracting your belly back and your chest back. It's that easy. And it's, you know, you said something which is so apt that you say, yeah, everybody talks about breathing, but aren't we all breathing? Yes, we're all breathing, but you'd be amazed how unconscious you were breathing.
Yeah.
Just bringing that consciousness to it. That's it.
Exactly. And it is so simple. It really is simple. We tend to complicate everything so, so much, don't we? And if only we sort of brought things back to just basics now and again, I think we'd be a lot better off. So it's wonderful to hear these tips from you, Rana. Now, if people want to find out more about you, you do work with people, both on an individual basis and also in groups, I think. Now, where do people find out more about you and your work?
It would be on my website. It's www.yogarising.org. All my information is on there. I'm not as active on other social media platforms with regards to the yoga. I'm active in other ways, but I haven't gotten around to that yet. But yeah, that's where people can find me. There's my email. There's all the information about what I do. And yeah, I've tended to, in the last few years, veer towards working with more women and women, especially over, I say especially, but over 40s, simply because that's my peer group. That's it. But I've also designed a program for adolescent girls because I feel that this information, if we empower these young girls with these kind of tools, especially these young girls who are completely involved and absorbed in all of the negative messaging they're getting from the TikToks and the Instagrams and the Snapchats, and this is what you need to look like, and if you don't, then you're less than or not enough. And this is one of my favorite, most passionate things to do, and especially with women, because we're more susceptible to those messages. To say you are perfect as is. Your body is perfect as is. Your body is designed to function perfectly as is. Don't buy into all of the outside noise and learn to tap into your own wisdom, because as women, we have a lot of wisdom. This applies to men as well, absolutely. I'm not discounting men, but it just feels that my passion is driving me more in that direction these days, where it just feels like I have so much from a personal lived experience that I can bring to the table on top of the modalities.
Well, I thank you for doing that, because I think that women, as we move into our third age, as they call it, have a lot to offer. And we have a lot of experience. We have a lot of wisdom. But we also have a lot of challenges as we get older. And you know, this is where somebody like you comes in, because you can support women as they move through these challenges, and not just, life challenges. Like relationships challenges and, you know, children leaving home, all that sort of thing going on, but also physical, menopause, that kind of thing. These are all very impactful on women of the age group that you're talking about.
Absolutely. I've actually just finished. I'm in the process of just finally editing my latest blog post. And it's very much about this, about women and a circle of women who are very close to me, around me, not physically around me, they're all over the world, but very close. It's a very close sisterhood kind of thing. And we're talking ranging from the ages of mid-40s to, mid-70s. And very recently, most of us have had to go through some really drastic, very drastic and unexpected, unforeseen, huge changes in our lives. A lot of us have been physically displaced, having to relocate suddenly, unexpectedly, due to whatever logistics, paperwork, visas, sick mother, whatever it is, and finding ourselves in places that we didn't necessarily choose to be. But then all of us during this very powerful time in a woman's life, and this is what I feel like I just want to cheerlead, and what I want to, it's such a powerful time in a woman's life that we're all, most of us postmenopausal, a couple perimenopausal, but what's very seldom talked about and celebrated in our culture is the power that comes with this period of a woman's life. This sense of freedom, the sense of fearlessness, the sense of I've been there, I've tasted it, I've tried it, I've done it, I know better. What about me? What do I want? In this, I see it as the prime. You know, we're building up to this magnificent phase of life where we've been taught that it's all about decline and decay, and you're falling apart and you're shriveling up and you're dying and you're not. You're not sexy and you're not.
Mm-hmm.
I find that absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah.
Even in a general casual conversation with girlfriends where they say, oh God, I'm getting close to menopause and I'm just dreading it. And I think I'm going to go on the hormones because I don't do, I literally had a girlfriend of mine saying to me, oh, I'm going to stay on these pills forever because I don't do menopause. So
wow. What
do you do menopause?
Wow.
Nobody does menopause. Menopause is a natural part of our life cycle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not something to be, you know, feared or, you know, run away from. So I see all these beautiful women. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, I'm sorry.
Who are coming into their own in a way that is awe-inspiring. All feeling fear, all feeling, I just don't know where this is going, but all from the sense of, they all meditate pretty much. They all tap into these different modalities as well. And another big thing is there's a support system, and the support system is so important. We are each other's support system.
Yeah, it's very important. And I do feel that, you know, a lot of women have suffered, let's be honest, with going through menopause, but it isn't something to be feared because there are ways of getting through it. I don't think I really suffered at all. I remember having some night sweats for a short, very, very short while, and that was about it, really. You know, not everybody does have a problem. And if you do have a problem, it can be dealt with. It's nothing to fear.
Options these days. It's not like it used to be back in the day where it was a one size fits all. I even had a gynecologist a few years ago saying to me, okay, when I put you on these hormones, I had a very, very different case and a very unique case. So mine is not a normal, everyday, average transition. So I did have to go on the hormones, and I loved being on the hormones. But then when I got off the hormones, again, personal challenges, I got off them for a few years saying, I'm going to do this naturally. And I got off them without weaning myself off. Mm. So my body went into shock. And I got every possible symptom known to womankind amplified tenfold.
Wow.
I can talk about it till, you know.
Yeah. Well, but I'm glad that you've got through it now. And I'm glad that you're sharing your wisdom. And thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today, because I think that it's very important. I think it's lovely that you have, you know, focused on a certain sector of society, women 40 and above, who probably do need a little bit extra help. I think everybody needs extra help right now. But, you know, I get women of a certain age, really, it's great for us to have a little bit of a helping hand as well. So thank you so much. Thank you for everything that you do. And thank you for joining me today. And again, your website is, tell us.
YogaRising.org. Excellent. Yoga Rising, one word.
YogaRising.org. Thank you so much, Rana. Thank you. Rana Khoury there. I really enjoyed hearing about her work, and I hope you did too. It's good to know that support is there if you need it, so do take a look at her website and see whether it might be for you. You can always check out my website, safehavenhealing.uk, for some soothing audio and video tracks to help you de-stress, and you can find out more about me or read my blog at thepracticalalchemist.uk. So that's safehavenhealing.uk and thepracticalalchemist.uk. And I'd love you to follow me on social media too. You'll find me as The Practical Alchemist on Facebook and Instagram. This show was brought to you in association with Nasal Guard, the drug-free nasal gel that uses electrostatic technology to block harmful airborne contaminants as well as indoor and outdoor allergens. So it's perfect for travellers and allergy sufferers alike. Thank you for listening. Join me next time for more Practical Alchemy. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.